The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.
On the line, we have Mr. Stewart, President of the Nurses Association of Trinidad and Tobago. Good afternoon to you, sir.
Pleasant good afternoon to you and your listeners. Thanks for having me.
All right, thanks for being here on Freedom 106.5 FM. My name is Bass. Welcome. So we're hearing about these seven babies that died in the hospital. Not one, not two, not three, not four, not five, but seven. I just thinking out loud, couldn't this have stopped, even if it was one or two or three, one too many? Couldn't this have been stopped? Did anybody speak out? How was this bacteria, so to speak, discovered? You know, so I'll let you explain some of these things here that the public would like to know.
Yes. Again, thanks for having us. And even before we begin, I just would like to place it in context. I trust you are hearing me well.
Yes, very well, sir.
Yes, because you... Okay.
Recording in progress. And
Go ahead.
So the persons must appreciate that the NICU department would have housed premature babies. These babies would have not gone full term. In Trinidad and Tobago, actually, our life expectancy would be 28 weeks. Once someone doesn't go full term and they are preterm, they deliver before the normal 9 months, we would quantify and evaluate to ensure that, look, this baby is at least 28 weeks. In developed countries, they go as low as 26 weeks because they have more technology, what have you. But our survivability of preterm babies are at 28. Now, at 28 weeks, the baby's immune system is not fully developed. I think persons would appreciate that. And then any form of bacteria infection that gets into the baby, it could really be deleterious for that child. And unfortunately, these sometimes common bacteria which exists within hospitals or could have been brought in by a relative, could have been brought in by a staff member, what have you, if that gets into these immune compromised babies, as I said, it could be really life-threatening, and unfortunately in this instance, that is exactly what transpired.
No, and their precautions.
Dynamics has to be looked at.
Hello, sir. You're not hearing me? Are you hearing me? No, I'm asking you a question. Can we dialogue? No.
Yes, I'm hearing you.
All right, and their proper precautions taking place for anybody at all that is supposed to enter into that, you know, prenatal ward with these premature babies that they're talking about. I mean, we just came out of COVID, so I would think if it's one place that should still have some protocols, I mean, if it's sanitized, wash your hands, even if you had to put on a PPE outfit or something, you know, gloves, mask, whatever it is, to go into that ward. Wouldn't those are precautions, even the nurses and stuff working there, and their special specific precautions for that ward?
Oh, yes, definitely. There is a plethora of policies, particularly for intensive care units, and the NICU is an intensive care unit for neonates. So that is what the investigation would have to determine where it fell short. While we would have our suspicions on where it would fall short, we would await the findings of the investigation. But definitely, the literature demonstrates particular areas where over the years, because it's not unique to Trinidad and Tobago, it's not unique to the Caribbean or internationally, there is generally a percentage, unfortunately, of babies will pass away due to multiple issues because of that critical age. But it will also can attribute to infections, nosocomial infections, hospital-acquired infections, which can lead to the untimely passing of these babies. So one of those key areas is just the spacing of the units or intubators or the beds which the babies lie on. If the beds are too close together, that alone could be a source of spread from one baby to the next. Something simple as how the environment is laid out. And persons must remember that the maternity block, unlike the central block, which was demolished and is currently now being rebuilt following the earthquake of a couple years ago and the protestation of the very association to get a new central block, the maternity block still remains. And it's a very old building, very, very old building. And really should have been knocked down, but I guess the government has to manage their resources. And we have been placed. The fortunate thing is that the NWRHA did, in fact, refurbish the NICU department while the remaining floors within the maternity block still remain totally unacceptable for staff or patients. The NICU, which is on the ground floor, was refurbished significantly. However, it's still in that general environment. So all of that are issues to be considered. There's many other issues in terms of how staff execute their duties if they do not have the required number of staffing. So if you ought to have the best practice is one nurse to one baby, yes, especially the high-risk babies. It's one nurse to one baby.
One nurse to one.
If you have a situation where one nurse have to see about two and three and four high-risk babies, the literature demonstrates internationally, we don't know what went on here, but internationally demonstrates that is a source of a risk for spread of infections.
Right. I was asking this. So to do to the investigation that is still undergoing, of course, there's no idea of how this started, where it started from, when did it start?
Well, there are a couple areas that has been highlighted. Actually, one was in daily newspapers indicating the infection came from another baby who was transferred because to Port Isabel General Hospital maternity block. I don't have any confirmation of it, but that has been placed in the media domain. If that transpired and that baby was the cause of this cross-infection, as it were, well, the reason why the infection got into the unit in the first place, then there are significant answers that would be required of administration, because prior to admission of any child, any neonate from another institution, especially private, then both physicians need to collaborate, the physician at the private institution and the physician at the public institution. Then they would advise them, well, this baby has some complications, to prepare the hospital to receive this child properly. And when that child comes in, if it's with a known infection, or even if it is unknown, you treat all incoming patients with the same level of risk. So you would place that patient in an isolated area and not bring them out into the general population until at least 48 hours would have elapsed. So to ensure, because during that 48 hours, that child who is coming in may not even show signs and symptoms of infection. So that's why you want to keep them separated from the remaining population and treat that child with separate medical and nursing staff. You cannot utilize the same nursing staff who is treating an infected child to treat all of the other patients. Because again, literature demonstrates that is a source of infection. So if that transpired where a child did in fact come and those physicians did not relay the information properly, and the administration of Port Isabel General Hospital did not ensure isolated areas were provided or this infant from another facility. If all of those things are true, then the administration of Northwest Regional Health Authority and specifically the medical chief of staff of the Port of Spain General Hospital would have some serious answers to provide to the national public. This story is a massive story internationally, regionally. When you look, nearly every foreign media house is carrying the story. So we need to demonstrate to the international public that we are competent enough to execute these investigations and hold persons accountable.
Right. So what has been done? What are some of the things that you think should be done to make sure this does not happen again?
Well, actually, we have a list of areas to be placed on. And it is broken up into different sections, as it will. Firstly, the mere fact that we are seeing so many preterm babies is a cause of concern for the association. Because again, just the mere fact, it is a delivery that did not go the full 9 months. We need to assess why our mothers are not going in for 9 months. And by the time 9 months, we'll be much stronger to withstand these infections, which would live on an individual like Staphylococcus aureus. That's an infection on all of our skins. But if it gets on a neonate who is very vulnerable and the immune system is not developed, that could lead to sepsis of the blood, something simple as that. So we would want to ensure prevention is the main thing. So we want increase in primary care interventions. How do we increase primary care interventions? We need to ramp up training of district health visitors. Long ago, district health visitors used to go to the homes of pregnant mothers to ensure the environment is suitable and conducive to ensuring a viable pregnancy, and we won't have too many complications that will result in an early stage. We also want to ensure all expectant mothers receive antenatal care. We are seeing far too often that mothers coming to deliver who have not gone through that antenatal care, which would have picked up on issues that could lead to early pregnancy. We also want to encourage families and family planning counseling to be introduced, where parents understand their own health status. Because if I am diabetic, then that affects my baby who is coming out. That could lead to further problems. We also focusing on, well, there must be continuous IPC training. IPC training is not something you do when there's a COVID outbreak or whatever it is. That is something continuously must be reinforced on an ongoing basis. Nursing personnel must take control of management of the ward. We have been losing so many senior nursing personnel over the years that we don't have senior nursing personnel who command the respect of the doctors and won't tolerate doctors breaching protocols or tolerate other hospital staff breaching protocols. Because we have lost many nurses over the last 3-4 years due to migration and due to the very Northwest Regional Health Authority not making nursing personnel permanent. And as you know, nursing personnel continue to work on 2013 salaries. So the pull factor out of Trinidad and Tobago is huge. So as we continue to lose our best and brightest and most experienced, and we place them with junior nurses, and we want to make sure we support those junior nurses appropriately.
Mm-hmm. So have you met with any of the parents, any of the parents, or spoken to any of the parents of the deceased babies?
No. The association won't be involved in that. That is for the Regional Health Authority and Ministry of Health to do. Though that we won't even try to meet with the patients, because that is patient confidentiality. So RHA is not supposed to let us know who the patients are, so we won't be part of it. But we do indeed extend our sympathies and our condolences to the relatives of these neonates.
All right. So once again, folks, if you just joined us, we're talking, of course, to the president of the Nursing Association of Trinidad and Tobago, concerning the babies that will pass. Are women today using a lot of salty foods and getting high blood pressure and consuming alcohol a leading cause of premature babies? People need to take care of their health. Of course, you mentioned, you're seeing a bit of concern, seeing a lot of premature babies coming in. What are some of the age groups of some of these premature babies? Is it older women? Is there anything with the age groups, younger females or anything?
Well, it's right across the board. It's right across the board. And I don't know if it's, I heard you mention some of the risk factors for these preterms. So NCDs across the board, hypertension, diabetes, all of these, which we have control over as an individual. If you become pregnant, that could translate to negatively affecting the health of your newborn. And that's why antenatal care is so important. Something simple as smoking, even if the mother is not smoking, but the father is smoking, that smoking relation could cause problems for that unborn child. So we really need to look ourselves, while the administration has a role to play, a massive role to play in ensuring the safety of our children within hospitals. We as individuals, you and I, and all persons who probably listen to this program, also have a responsibility for our own health and that of our loved ones. It's very difficult when you have a situation where a mother gives birth to, delivers prematurely, let's say 25 weeks, 26 weeks, the child's organ is not fully developed. Their lungs, their heart, all of these things are not fully developed. So they are very, almost 99% chance of not making it. If you, in Trinidad and Tobago, if you are delivered anywhere before 26, 27, 28 weeks, it's non-viable. And then if that happens and the child reaches in the neonate ward and the child passes away, suspicions will be thrown at the staff when the staff have no control over that. The organs simply won't develop. So we want to be cautious and just, while we admit stem neonates dying in such a short period is really unheard of, unfortunate, but the having neonates die within that department, it is not something far-fetched or unusual. Sometimes it is expected based on when the child would have been delivered by the mother.
All right, folks, of course, you are welcome. Some calls at 627-3223-625-2257. We're talking with, of course, the president of the Nursing Association concerning the babies, that the unborn babies that, passed in the Port of Spain General Hospital. Any other practices? This has never happened in Montauk or San Fernando or Sangre Grande or the New World. They have a lot of new hospitals out there. But something for this magnitude to happen, like you told me before, you want to blame the, a lot of people say, it should be the administrator. But let's say it was that an infected baby, did come out from one hospital just out of delivery or something, and had was to be taken to a ward. What is the process in between there from the baby, being born to knowing that it's infected, to going to be placed in that ward with other babies where it could have infected other babies? What is it? Just guide us through the process there. Who knows what and who gives the direction? Okay, send the baby there.
Well, that is strictly between physician to physician. Mm-hmm. The medical chief of staff would have been informed.
Yeah.
That is standard protocol. When you're accepting these sorts of transfers, there's actually a neonatal transfer policy, which the organization is supposed to be following. So we would want to ensure that was actually followed.
Right.
Because if it was followed and that article is true, because I'm not sure if the article was true or not, but that is what was mentioned by one of the relatives who lost a child. So given if we were to accept it to be true, then it would demonstrate a clear violation of that neonatal policy. And that neonatal transfer policy actually recently came out, only in 2020, with the advent of COVID-19. Because you had situations in COVID-19 where you had healthy babies without any infections to COVID, and then you still had mothers delivering who were delivering babies with who were positive for COVID-19. So that policy was created to ensure babies that come from other facilities are not introduced into the general setting of the other babies. You give them time in isolation you do all the necessary tests before you introduce them.
Let's take a call. We have a call on the line there. Let's take a call. Hello, good afternoon.
Base, I just want some clarification from your guest in relation to the difference between high dependency and intensive care. Where are you saying that the ratio in relation to nurses nurse to baby in intensive care and the high dependency unit, what is the difference? And where do those babies were?
All right, thank you. You got a question, sir?
Yes. I hope I capture the question, because it's a little difficult to hear. There's a little delay. So if I understand the gentleman, he wants to know what is the ratio of nurses to babies in the intensive care unit, because the NICU is an intensive care unit. You have the adult intensive care unit, and then you have NICU, which is the neonatal intensive care unit. In all ICUs, once you have a high dependency patient, a high risk patient, then the ratio is one nurse to one baby. In Trinidad and Tobago, we are really struggling to retain our NICU nurses and really struggling to retain our ICU adult nurses. It's a real struggle because they are so much in demand internationally, in the US, in England, in Canada, in Bahamas, in Saudi Arabia. It's a real struggle to keep them in Trinidad and Tobago, especially on 2013 salary, especially when the Northwest Regional Health Authority still has them on temporary.
A lot of them are moving out. But I think what he was asking really is the difference between the two units. He was asking really the difference in the two units. The difference. You also asked the difference.
Yes. So what you have? Yes. Well, the difference is one is for neonates, one is for adults. It's the same type of ICU setting where you need basically every need of the patient, whether it's adult or neonate, has to be provided by the nurse. Every single activity, nurse or the doctor, every single activity, that child or that adult cannot do anything on their own. From the minute they can start doing stuff on their own, for instance, from the time the adult begins, have you, they would move them up to a step-down unit. But ICU is generally for really high-risk patients. Yes, and what you have happening in Trinidad and Tobago, and not only in NICU, and I really don't want, while the focus is on NICU, this is a widespread problem, especially within the three larger RHAs.
All right, okay, let's take the call. Hello, good afternoon.
Present afternoon, this and present afternoon to your guest. Yeah, well, I was wondering if who will do a separate investigation into this incident.
PAHO?
Yeah, PAHO. Because PAHO is for the Caribbean Health Authority.
Okay.
So I was wondering if PAHO will do a separate investigation into this incident.
Yeah, boy. Well, wondering if PAHO would do a, and investigate? I don't know if you would be able to answer that, but would Paho be doing? I mean, what is the level of really investigation? Who are really investigating this here? Is it the NWRHA like himself investigating himself? Is it a police matter? Who really doing this investigation?
Well, regards to the investigations, you know, we really don't hold much faith in those investigations that have been announced. It is expected that an investigation will be had, but we really don't place much emphasis on it. When the investigation is completed, we'll be reviewing it, and we'll be having our two cents on the findings of the investigation. What we have been lobbying for is that there must be a quality council and a health sector accreditation council that will continuously monitor both public and private healthcare facilities in Trinidad and Tobago. That is the solution to this issue. No plaster by just doing these sporadic investigations every time something comes up is going to resolve this issue. Because this issue has occurred prior in Mount Hope Hospital, in San Fernando General Hospital. There are reports on these issues. Yes, this is the largest amount of babies who would have been lost in a short space of time, but this is not an isolated incident. This has happened before, at least on two or three occasions before. So what we need is a health sector accreditation which will continuously monitor every single facility, every single hospital, both public and private, to make sure the public continuously receive a high standard of care. As you say, we have no real faith in himself investigating himself. I mean, yes, you, as an organization, you would want to do your own internal investigation to ensure you are maintaining your own standards, but there must be an external body continuously doing it. Even if you were to bring in Paho now, Paho is not an organization set up to monitor every single hospital in Trinidad and Tobago. Paho would not know these circumstances that led up to the infection. Paho is going to probably give us, this is the nature, this is the diseases. Yes, these are the three microorganisms that would have led to the sepsis of the neonates. They may give you some recommendations. They may say this is most likely due to shortage of nursing staff. It may be due to not enough consultants. They will do some stuff like that. But a health sector accreditation would have been there before the incident happened, and be able to continuously track to make sure all of the checklist items which you're supposed to be meeting in terms of safe patient to staff ratio, in terms of the right consumables, the right bandages, the right needles you are using on an ongoing basis, to make sure you are following the policy continuously, that organization would have been a better position if we would have done that since the creation of the regional health authorities, because that was on the cards, to have that health sector accredited council. And they would be in a position to say, look, you are not meeting the basic requirements, and therefore I would give you 10 days to buck up, otherwise we will shut you down. This is what goes on in other countries. This is what goes on in England. This is what goes on in America. You cannot be below the standard and continue to operate. That is unheard of. Right now, if you make a complaint within the RHAs, the quality department will take your complaint and the very employer will do the investigation amongst themselves. And that's the end of that. The most you may get is sometimes the individual who made the complaint may not even know the outcome of that complaint in a number of instances. We have to move away from that and be able to have this independence. So after all of this, if we don't have a situation where the Minister of Health comes out and say from today, we're going to start setting up the Health Sector Accreditation Council, of which the IDB would have funded us since 1994 to establish. Then we would have failed these seven babies. Let these seven babies' deaths not go
in vain.
Let it not be wasted.
Yeah.
Let it not just end up in vain. Yes, let us take decisive action. Yeah. And again, if we don't walk away with a Health Sector Accreditation Council or a minimum staff to patient ratio, then we would have failed those seven babies.
How long ago were any incidents like these, been recorded? Have there been any incidents like this in any other institution?
Yes. Actually, there was an Express article which was titled, and it was launched over the weekend, actually, which I actually did a pretty good job in itemizing all of these similar incidents that happened prior. And it almost seems like every 5 years you have a scenario like this. So it is definitely, it's not the first, hopefully it's the last, once we implement the strategies we would have identified.
Somebody asked you about OSHA. What about OSHA? The OSHA, well, agency monitor policies and practices are carried out, equipment, collaboration, etc. What about OSHA in this case?
Well, with regards to OSHA, and I can tell you OSHA is extremely understaffed as we speak. In fact, majority of the organizations that fall under the Ministry of Labor, OSHA, the RRCB, all of those boards are very understaffed, and they are not executing their duties as they ought to. We, as the association, would have written to that body on a couple occasions, and we don't even get a response from them sometimes. So we have little faith in OSHA as it's currently structured, as it currently understaffed. It leaves a lot to be desired, and we hope the Minister of Education, Stephen McClatchy, really ramps up and start to do some work within his sector. We really don't hear much from him. I really don't know what to say about the Minister of Labor. I know we are part of the joint trade union movement, and all unions are complaining about those organizations which fall under his remit. And we really hope he begins to do some work, even though it's in his last year before the election. I really hope he does some work. I mean, all of the labor legislation is antiquated labor legislation, including the OSH Act. So it's really unfortunate. And you know, in terms of another dynamic, we would hope, and you asked me if we met with the relatives. I hope the relatives, we're going through a difficult time now. I hope they meet. I know they have already taken a lawyer and started the legal process, I guess. But I hope they meet with the RHA, the Northwest Regional Health Authority, and sit down and come to some form of agreement on compensation. I don't think everything needs to go to court when you can get the same relief from the organization without going to court and without fattening the pockets of lawyers. I mean, they have enough money. They don't need additional money. So I believe the authority would recognize they had some shortcomings and would compensate. I mean, the families don't have to relive such a terrible tragedy over and over, and especially going to court and being quizzed. I really would like those grieving relatives to go through such a scenario. If the RHA definitely is not compensating them, then they could treat with it.
Yeah, but no, there should be a national review of staffing and nurses and quality of materials being given to the staffing nationally, right? And the management should answer if this is working, if working conditions are up to international standards, and let the RHA management, right, answer. And of course, well, they say you're making very good points here. All RHAs should be dissolved to reduce the political interference in healthcare. It should again fall under the Ministry of Health, and you can set up these monitoring councils. You need the reaches of the politicians to be limited. You know, they don't do like any secret visits, or, you know, like they have these secret shoppers, like we have undercover bosses, people going in to just make sure certain checks. I mean, it's health we're talking about. Nobody goes in to really check to see if the systems, everything is up to mark.
Well, I mean, several ministers have tried that over the years.
Mm.
Some CEOs have done that. But as I say, that is more haphazard. That is not best practice. The best practice is to have this independent organization who continuously reviews the performance of these RHAs and private hospitals. And I want to reiterate, and private hospitals, because there are a lot of issues with those private hospitals. And that is where you pay out of pocket for. And we are aware, because we monitor a number of these court cases, that some of these private hospitals are not up to scratch also. So we know, we can vouch for that the quality of nursing staff within the public sector. When you go to the private sector, some of these private organizations don't even hire registered nurses to perform some of these skills. And we are aware of that. And we actually, at the time, wrote to the council and wrote to the Ministry of Health whistleblowing on a particular institution which wasn't hiring registered nursing personnel. You can be rest assured, every single nurse you interact with is a qualified nurse in the public sector. You cannot say that in the private sector. In fact, I will go so far, out of all the private hospitals that we currently have in Trinidad and Tobago, probably two or three, I could put my head on a block that, yes, they only utilize registered nurses, properly trained registered nurses. A lot of them do all sorts of things. So this is why you really need this independent body who would do these investigations and monitor the outcomes that these hospitals are producing. So if you are seeing ERHA never having a scenario where they have high rates of mortality within their system, and then you compare it with another RHA, or you compare it with a private hospital, and that other institution has a higher rate compared, and you compare the population of the two, you'll want to know, but what is going on here that is not going on over there? And then you would go in and make certain investigations, and you would want to see documentation that the staff is doing what the protocol has clearly laid out for the staff to do, or that the cleaning staff, the supportive staff, is doing what they have to do in terms of the daily cleaning, and in terms of when do they prepare deep cleaning, when do they conduct in-depth cleaning. Because I could tell you right now, across all RHAs, all of them are cleaning from pillar to post as we speak. Nothing is being left to chance. So why that cannot be done on a continuous basis, like once a month you do deep cleaning, or twice for the month, that should be recorded. And if it is being done, then there will be a log to show it was done. And if this institution, this health sector accreditation, goes in and you don't have evidence that it was done, or you do a swab of the area and you find a high proliferation of infection, then you can treat it accordingly.
Yeah. Mr. ID Stewart, well, thank you very much for your detail. You know, so I'm sure they have the situation, and we hope all the best. So you agree with the parents, you know, dealing with the lawyers there and going to, because this is a, you know, well, malpractice, you know, if you want to call it that. Would you call it malpractice?
If I would call it malpractice?
Yeah.
That is for the problem for the courts. But it will be a difficult case. It is not a slam dunk case for the relatives by any stretch of the imagination. You really have to, first begin, you would need to have a doctor be willing to testify against all of his other colleagues that something different could have been done. And in Trinidad and Tobago, we have very few neonatologists. In fact, we probably only have two or three specialized neonatologists in Trinidad and Tobago. So you have to get one of those two to go against the other one to say that the practices that were employed is not the appropriate and procedures that would take, and that is a really an uphill task. So this is why we are suggesting that the parents, before they go that route, is to see if the Northwest will compensate them without going through that heartache. They may still want to do it, but it could be a serious. And ask, if you ask any individual who went through that process before, or if you watch past court cases, you would see the really difficult task is to prove a case like malpractice, particularly in Trinidad and Tobago, where our society is so small.
All right.
And the issues are not as clear-cut. So, for instance, if you remember Baby Cottrell, that was in the news in Montauk about 5 years, probably a little longer than 5 years ago. That could easily be proved because there was a clear insertion on the scalp of the baby. The consultant was not duty. That doctor should not have done such a procedure without a consultant being present. That was a little easier. But in case of this instance introduced, it will be slightly difficult to prove that case. But it would be a good test case. So we would be able to, based on that eventual judgment, if it does go that route, it will be a good idea for the staff and for future parents as to how to safeguard themselves accordingly, to prevent an instance like this, and how do you treat with it. But I know that the RHA do compensate families who have gone through similar instances. So that might be just an easier mode. But either way, it's up to the parents. They would know how they feel. They would know what they are seeking. But I would really hope they don't have to go through such a terrible rehashing of a scenario. It could really play on their minds. It's difficult for the nursing personnel already. Having worked with these babies, they witnessed this firsthand.
All right, let's take a call there. Hello? Let's take a call. Hello, good afternoon. Final call, hello? Hello? Call. All right. Nobody there. And a question or statement from one of the things. Many cases due to the physical malpractice, but institutional shortcomings due to the poor management and HR decisions over time. The public taxes used to pay off these people out of the court, but the people responsible for the bad decisions are never brought under scrutiny. Let's go here. Hello, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Comrade Base.
Yes, sir.
Comrade Base, within the police service, we have the blue wall of silence. Within the medical industry, there's the white wall of silence. That's why I mentioned before, nobody has malpractice insurance walking about in those wards. The parliament needs to pass legislation. If we have to pay you under our public system, go out there and get malpractice insurance and take this burden off of us. But again, another asshole in the third, in this part of the world anyhow. Take care, brother.
All right. Well, Mr. Stewart, thank you very much, but we'll leave it at that, okay? I really hope that this
Thanks so much for having me.
I really hope this does not happen again, you know. All right. Thank you very much, sir.
Yes, yes.
All right. We've been talking to Mr. I.D. Stewart, the president of the Nurses Association of Trinidad and Tobago.
The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.